April is National Poetry Month, a designation first observed in 1996. Fayetteville is embracing the month. Maya Angelou will speak to an overflow crowd at the Fayetteville Public Library. Joyce Carol Oates, who has 10 volumes of her poetry published, will be speaking on the University of Arkansas campus. Additionally, more than 24 other events connected to the month will be staged in Fayetteville, a city with several regularly scheduled poetry readings, events, and shows every month. Since we're just days away from April, we decided to put the focus of this month's Three People segment on poetry. Ozarks at Large's Kyle Kellums talked to Houston Hughes, a performance poet and an organizer of Fayetteville's observance next month. Jeffrey Davis, author of the forthcoming collection, Revising the Storm, and a member of the University of Arkansas faculty beginning next year. And Matthew Henriksen, a founder of the Burning Chair reading series and the author of collections of poetry. Kyle asked them about poetry's relevance in a world dominated by the 24-hour news cycle. Houston Hughes answered first.
There has to be a need for it because entertainment is everywhere now. I mean, you can very easily get on the internet and there are thousands of sites dedicated to making sure you can get 15 seconds of entertainment anytime that you need and keep doing that over and over again until you're satisfied. So for poetry to take its place, it needs to have some kind of inroads that then makes it necessary for you or makes it at least enjoyable enough that you want to do it repeatedly. And I think that then comes into how poetry is presented in modern times. Because if the only exposure that people have had to poetry is studying it in school, then a lot of people are going to have a really terrible idea of what it is. If the only memory you ever have associated with something is, I was forced to learn this in school and then never used it in life, you're probably going to have a really crappy sort of association with that thing.
Jeffrey, you're nodding over there.
Well, I've been thinking a lot about this recently, having gone on various interviews, and I think it does, or I'm concerned about, or I'm not surprised given when I teach creative writing to college-level students, often you have to work through a similar resistance for the introductory classes. And a lot of it for me does have to go back to, or I'm always interested in trying to work against how it's presented in high school or earlier. You know, poetry is this decoding thing that will be difficult, bear through it sort of thing. And I think that starting with that sort of defeatist attitude doesn't do poetry any favors in terms of readership. And so I often start classes by presenting poetry as something that works on our existing engagement with the world, but heightens it in various ways, that we have the skill set already. It's about training those skill sets, both as readers and writers. So to try to have a more user-friendly introduction to poetry, I think at the high school level would really help with that kind of resistance, you know, walking in expecting not to get it, right? And so I try to get them to think about poetry not so much as something that means, you know, I'm using air quotes that you can't see right now, but that poetry does something to us and for us and,
Well, Matthew, you and I have talked about this before, and it's, I don't know, there are certain art forms like jazz or opera or a sport like cricket where if you're not introduced to it in a certain way, you might reject it. But once you find, I think maybe sometimes it just takes that one poem when you realize, oh, this is something that I do relate to.
Yeah, I think my attitude has changed a lot towards this to the point where I sort of don't care what poetry does. I've seen in the last few years some articles and some publications talking about poetry's dead or it's not useful or poets are killing it. And I just sort of laugh because I've seen so many people over the years come across poetry that I find exciting and they're just like, where has this been? And the engagement's transformative, especially when I was teaching. It's the poetry that's out there that's interesting is something that people are going to find if they're looking for it. And poetry offers so much, and there's so many different types of poetry that are very vibrant in these sort of smaller subcultures that are totally self-sustaining. You know, when people talk about poetry being dead, it's like, no, these are the things that are thriving while our mainstream culture and our mainstream medias are just completely dying and oblivious and lacking any substance. And so, I don't know. I think poets just are going to keep doing what they're doing. I mean, we all have our you know, cadres and our groups of friends, and we all just kind of thrive off of that smaller energy, and people keep coming to it. And once somebody comes in, and if somebody's looking for what poetry has to offer and they step into the right place, they're probably going to be hooked for good. You know, people who love poetry or fall in love with poetry even later in their life. I have friends who've come to it in their 40s and 50s, and if they really latch onto it and they find a community of poets, they're going to become poets, you know, at least going to tinker with it, you know. It's an art form where there are as many practitioners as there are fans, and I think that's actually what keeps it really, really, you know, evolving and surviving outside of, you know, either outside of academia or outside of, you know, commercial sectors, or in a lot of cases outside of where the grant money is, because people just sort of grassroots sustain it.
You each have various roles of, I guess, what we would call outreach, whether you're teaching, whether you're putting together the Fayetteville celebration of National Poetry Month, whether you're putting together the Burning Chair readings or things. And you mentioned that it's out there, Matthew, if people are looking for it. But sometimes do you feel or not feel that as poets and sort of ambassadors of poetry that you should do something else to help people find it?
Well, I mean, so one of the terms that I like using in describing myself rather than, you know, just a poet or just a teacher is to think more about my relationship to poetry as a literary citizenry. So I think part of helping people find it rather than find your own poetry or even poets that you love is about supporting other poetry. I mean, Matt is a fabulous example of this, right? And I think that interest in reaching out and being a good reader of other people's poetry is I think one of the foundational qualities to creating a vibrant community of poetry, both writers and readers.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, and I think another part of the overcoming problem that you talked about is people thinking of poetry as the one thing they've had an experience with. And that's like going to see one movie ever and then not liking that one movie and saying, I hate all these movie things, these motion pictures. I don't know about them. Because I imagine each of us comes not only from a different background, but has a very different style. What I do is performance poetry. I'm very heavily rooted in that. And you know, while I'm always glad to send people the way of these other folks, like, that's not my bag. And I can enjoy it now that I've gotten so far into this that I have to recognize all the roots. I have to recognize where it came from and the history and the writing necessary to do page poetry. The stage is where what I do belongs and what it's made for. And I think, again, if someone walks into a poetry slam and says, this is too loud, this is too obnoxious, I hate poetry, that would be the most ignorant thing you could possibly do, because you've got the Burning Chair readings to go to, you've got literary classes, you've got all this other great stuff that you could go to. And I think it's it's human nature to want to group things like that, to be able to say, oh, I hate one thing, so I hate this whole group of poets now, these whole people. And we are as utterly different in approach as could be. I do think it's incumbent upon us to push poetry, but I think that's because poetry is a radical tool of empathy. I think that poetry, when done correctly, allows you to see things from someone else's perspective, and by the same token, to allow you to understand that someone else can see things from your perspective. That's what a good metaphor is. A good metaphor is someone who's gone inside your head and reassured you that they can see the world in a way that's similar to you. And that helps fight off depression. That helps you communicate in a better way. That can do so many amazing things for a person, regardless of what genre they decide to enter into poetry through. It's a tool, and I think that if you're not making sure everyone knows that that tool is available for their betterment as a human being, then you're failing at poetry.
Well, what does make it seem to me a bit more accessible is that person is doing that with tools I already possess. I don't have to have a guitar or a saxophone or a great arm to throw a football. It's words, and I know words. So it seems much more approachable than having to pick something up and learn how to use that.
One of the really amazing things about poetry that I think is different from almost any other art form is that our idiosyncrasies of language and of personality and of perception are what make us great poets.
Absolutely.
So you don't want to be like anyone else. And I think Houston said something earlier about getting to a certain place in his own work where he can appreciate what different types of poets are doing. And I think that's a place where I am. That's a place where a lot of my friends have gotten. But I also think it's what draws people into a slam if they're sort of uptight and they think poetry's Robert Frost, or into Burning Chair where they think poems are supposed to have a particular kind of meaning and a narrative and an order. There's this sort of equalizing thing where you just get up and it's just words. And it is really hard to get to that place where you can really be confident in what you're doing. I mean, most people, you know, that I know, it takes 10, 15, 20 years before you really even get on the yeah. path. You know, once in a yeah, while it happens yeah. a little earlier. But in order to get there, you just kind of got to let everything go and just write and write and write. I wonder how many thousands of pages, air quotes, that Houston has composed, you know, and Jeffrey, I mean, between us, you know, there's probably over 100 manuscripts of work thrown out the door before we got to a place where we settled and we're like, okay, I'm writing poetry now.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was just talking with someone earlier about getting the question now with this book coming out, and they, for whatever reason, I always get tripped up by the question, you know, when or how long did it take you to write this book? Because it was as if it was a moment where I decided to think about the book, wrote the book, and finished the book. In large part, it just feels like, I mean, like Matt saying, this book took me all years to write it, and then someone decided that now is time to sort of put it on fancy paper in between a book cover, right? But I think part of that patience to go back to the sort of readership, I do credit a lot of. I wasn't the kind of reader that I am now until poetry, in part until probably graduate school, and I credit the patience that I developed with my own writing to the patience that I've developed working through really difficult poetry or difficult texts and spending a lot of time. Waiting for things to sort of become clear, or waiting for what I could do with the text, and so that's another I think misconception is, you know, poets spend like the hour in front of the page crafting these dope poems, then the other 223 hours being happy about their writing, and I don't think that's really that's, at least in my experience, it's more, if anything, not even close to the opposite, right? Where it's 23 hours of like anxiety and maybe an hour of writing a handful of words and then throwing those words away, right? Repeat, repeat, repeat. So I think the way in which reading really helps you craft a patience and a dedication that's not so demanding that results happen immediately, because that's not the way it feels, at least for this poet sitting in this chair.
Yeah, absolutely. The only thing that you need to write poetry is you need to have read at least one thing and thought that you loved it, and then read something else and thought, I can write better than that. And as long as you have those two things, then you're ready to go.
Well. Houston, April is National Poetry Month.
Yes, yes it is.
Created by an Arkansan, or at least wholeheartedly endorsed to its present state by then-President Bill Clinton. Fayetteville's embracing it.
Yes, absolutely. It's interesting how we got to that point, because I went to the mayor's office a couple of months ago and was like, hey, National Poetry Month's coming up. I know we've had some informal things before. I didn't know if you guys were doing anything officially. And their response was, oh, we love poetry. It'd be great if we did something. Know anyone who might be able to take that over? It's like, yeah, I guess. So, I can tell you about all the events, but I think the really important thing is the reason why you celebrate National Poetry Month, and that's because you have to let people know that I'm over here doing Slam, and you're over there doing Burning Chair, and you're over there at the university, but it's connected. Mm-hmm. It's all so connected, and we have to be able to send people back and forth to these different things, and we have to let people know that this is not, this is not the crap that they imagined in their heads that they were forced to memorize. It's a living thing. It's alive right now. The problem isn't that people are writing eulogies for poetry. The problem is that the only poem that people have ever memorized is that eulogy. It's in their head that poetry is a dead thing, And it's our job to show them that it's alive. And that's what National Poetry Month is for. It's, you know, when people see all of the events happening in one month, and then we're like, oh, and by the way, Burning Chair and Last Saturday and Ozark Poets and Writers Collective and all these other things happen every single month. People are like, oh, I thought this was dead.
If people want to know about the readings when they happen or websites or Facebook addresses, Burning Chair.
Wow, I wonder where. I don't even know the Burning Chair website.
So that's okay.
Google Burning Chair Readings or find the Burning Chair Readings on Facebook. You can also look at Backspace on Facebook, which is a new performance space where a lot of readings are happening now.
All right. Houston?
If people- look up Last Saturday Fayetteville on Facebook or National Poetry Month Fayetteville is also all over Facebook and going to be there since we have 15 events in 30 days. And yeah, Fayetteville Word Wars is our local poetry slam.
Your book's out next month.
My book is out this or next month. Technically, it's being released right now.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So Revising the Storm by Boa Editions. I'm doing a book release that Matt's, graciously putting together.
Burning Chair Readings at Nightbird Books with Sarah Nicholson, another local poet who has a book coming out from Song Cave.
Very talented poet. Yeah. So April 18th, right?
April 18th.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Gentlemen, thank you very much.
Thanks,
Kyle.
Thank you.
Matthew Henriksen, Houston Hughes, and Jeffrey Davis talked to Ozark's at-large's Kyle Kellums inside the Furman Garner Performance Studio for our Three People series.